Writers and experts from around the globe have gathered in Australia this week for a congress on the changing nature of world literature. Novels have the power to connect people and cultures, but literature composed and translated in English, including from Australia, has often been seen as a tool of colonialism, provoking some real pushback in places like India. That's one of the themes being explored at the Third International Congress of the World Literature Association, which opens today at the University of Sydney. Earlier I spoke with two of the guests, Professor Liu Shusen. He's the director of the Australian Studies Centre at Peking University in Beijing in China, and there are 36 of them around Australia, around China. And Professor Gauri Viswanathan, she's the director of the South Asian Institute at Columbia University in the United States. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Now, Professor Liu, if I could start with you, and maybe with the parochial. Australian literature has long been recognised and translated and read in China, but I gather it wasn't originally seen as Australian, it was seen as British.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think that in the early 1910s, the concept of world literature came into China. When world literature as a concept came to China, so the Chinese writers, some of the Chinese writers engaged in this a literary movement. And first, they did look at the European literature, and this is the mainstream literature in China. And then some writers turned their eyes to Australia, and they found Australian literature. So included as a part of world literature.
Oh, look, we're going to come back to that, but I want to bring in Professor Viswanathan, because you've extensively researched English studies in India under British rule, and how the role of the novel was changed by Indigenous experience and language. That is so interesting. How did that happen in India?
And I think the novel, as it was introduced in India, was really not in the form and the shape that we assume it to be today. Because one of the intentions of the colonial administration was to inculcate principles of morality and truth and honor, justice, so that while the colonial administrators were constrained by not being able to teach the Bible, because they were always afraid that the instruction of religion or religious principles would alienate, Hindus and Muslims, so they brought Christianity through the back door, which was to introduce English literature. So it was really the genre of literature that was more or less brought in as a substitute for religious teaching that, is the starting point for the evolution of literary studies. And the novel was the kind of offshoot of that kind of approach.
But I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I know you've also looked at Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness and even Peter Carey's, our own Oscar and Lucinda. So, I mean, these were certainly not straight out of the Bible, were they? I mean, they were introduced, were they not, Indigenous readers to quite a lot of rebellion, a lot of cynicism, a lot of complete critique of the culture from which they were coming. Was that the plan?
That was not the plan at all. In fact, the critique, I think, comes about through the adaptations that are generated by, the introduction of these novels.
A focus of the conference, I know, is Indigenous writing and Indigenous voices, and the Australian Indigenous author Alexis Wright will present a keynote address. I wonder how much a country like, say, China or India reflect this cacophony of many Indigenous voices that we're certainly now having, I think, come through, thankfully, in Australia. What would you say to that, Professor?
Okay, I think Alexis Wright is one of the most popular Australian writers in China, and one of the main reasons that's the Chinese translation. So I think all her major works were translated into Chinese.
Really?
We have a very well-established Chinese translator, and his name is Li Yao. Li Yao has been...
Oh, he's really a very venerable person,
yeah,
isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, and he's over 70 years old, but still very dedicated to translating Australian literature. So it's very hard to find a well-established translator who will be devoting all his time in translating the literature of one single country into Chinese. So I think that he has contributed significantly to the Chinese translation of Alex Wright and other writers.
Yeah, but you must be aware of the current political debate in Australia about Chinese political and cultural influence in this nation. And what is remarkable is this focus on Australia in China, with no less than 36 Australian studies centres covering a range of disciplines. So, I mean, how do you explain that there's a real gulf between those two facts? Aren't they?
I think I'm proud of that we can have 36 centers for Australian studies across China, and most of them are based in Chinese universities. One of the main reasons, I think, that in the later 1970s, a group of 9 Chinese scholars they came to Australia to study in the University of Sydney, and they called the Gang of 9, and so they studied here for 2 years. Most of them got their master degree. And then you just mentioned I come from the Center for Australian Studies at Peking University. Our founding director, Professor Hu Zhuanglin, was one of the Gang of Nine. He studied in Sydney for 2 years under the late Professor Michael Halliday in linguistics. So when the members of Gang of Nine returned to China, and they just did the seminal work in establishing Australian studies centers in Chinese universities. So our center was founded in 1996, one of the earliest Australian studies centers in China.
And so they're still thriving, are they?
Still thriving, that. So, and originally, the center was just committed to teaching basic courses like Australian literature and history to undergraduates. Now that our center becomes disciplinary. So we have faculty members from many faculties.
I just do wonder, Professor Viswanathan, despite what you've said, I wonder whether English does provide a more universal platform still to be published, particularly for emerging people and maybe even emerging Indigenous voices.
It's a controversial topic, no doubt. And I think this has been one of the main political debates in India, the fact that writers writing in English, particularly novelists writing in English, tend to get more recognition abroad than the writers who are writing in vernacular languages. And of course, the situation in India is somewhat different than the one in China, considering that there are so many different languages that have very rich literary traditions in India. And I do think that there is considerable disharmony among the writers, the community of writers, precisely because of who gets recognition. And the international market seems to be the first resort for many writers. And so therefore, I think one thing that is now a thriving industry right now in India is translation into vernacular languages of novels written abroad. Though I find it interesting that it's perhaps literary criticism that is even more widely translated than creative
the
writing.
Isn't that fascinating?
And the reach of critical thought, literary theory, in translation is perhaps greater than the reach of creative writing.
Look, thank you all very much. It sounds like a very interesting conference. Professor Lu Shusen, Professor Gauri Viswanathan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.